The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
It's Monday, and we have three very interesting hours for you tonight. In an hour, we'll be talking to Dick Allgaier and a couple of friends of his about that amazing remote viewing session and work about the long-lost and forgotten hieroglyphs, mummies, all kinds of things in these massive underground chambers in where? In the Grand Canyon, and other things as well, coming up a little later tonight. First up, Dr. Henry Nyman is with us. Henry is with us once a month or more to bring us up to date on all kinds of things, from viral to, well, we're talking about now DNA, chromosomes. It's 23andMe. And we have a story out of California a couple days ago that caught Henry's interest, and I sent him a copy of it as well. It had to do with finally catching a California serial killer and rapist. Over a long period of time, 30 years, I don't know, something like that. And they used somehow DNA to do it. And Henry wanted to come on and explain all that and share it with us tonight, because we are now in an age when you can run, but you can't hide. And if you've got DNA, they may catch you. It's that simple. Hello, Henry. Welcome back.
Well, Jeff, it's good to be back. It's a different day, a little bit different topic, but it is certainly current. And I think you'll have a better idea within the next hour is how powerful this technique is. And essentially, it can be used. If you've got a DNA sample from anybody in America, there's no problem in identifying who that is.
And they'll do it. This is potentially, they may not do retina scans. They may have you just be swabbed at the airport, and they'll pop it in a supercomputer and have your total history before you take another three steps.
Yeah, you can get a lot of information. And the databases, there's some privacy issues, but the technology.
Privacy, Henry? What's that?
Well,
it used to be privacy.
It's not what it used to be, right. Mm-hmm. Right. So, things are becoming fairly widely known
they certainly
everybody
are.
and using a bunch of different approaches. But this technology for actually forensics. I haven't really talked much about the forensics, and that's not exactly my area of expertise. But in this case, it's using DNA, and I've always said the sequence tells the story, and that's exactly what is happening. What did happen to catch the Golden State killer. And it's been even longer than that. I mean, his crime spree really was between 1976 and 1986. And you know, it's gone unsolved in part because, you know, there wasn't a DNA sample available from him. And the technology kind of evolved from when he did do the crime spree. There was a series that was on, it was on Headline News, and it was a five-part series that they made this year. And remarkably, they made the series before he was caught. He was just caught last Tuesday. And they did actually flash up at the end of this each episode that Joseph James D'Angelo, age 72, was arrested on Tuesday as the suspect. I mean, there's not even a suspect. He is the killer, and his DNA is an exact match of the DNA from the crime scene. But it's really how they identified him that's very instructive as to how this new technology can and does work. And it's kind of a flip side of how forensics in the past is worked. In the past, the goal was to find an exact match. And you can't find an exact match unless DNA has already been collected on the killer and is in a database that the authorities can access. Right. And so in this case, he never gave a DNA sample. He actually was a former police officer, and most of his crimes actually were done before the DNA technology had really evolved to where it is today. But even though he never gave a sample, that they did end up getting a sample from him once they had figured out exactly who it was. So they were then able to get a sample of a discarded object. I don't know if it was, you know, a coffee cup or a cigarette or something. So they did actually get his DNA before they made the arrest, and they knew that his DNA exactly matched samples that were collected, you know, back in the 70s. And so they knew for sure that he was their man. But before they got his sample, They basically used the technology that I've talked about a little bit on personal DNA testing, as you mentioned in the intro, with like 23andMe or Ancestry.com. And that technology is quite powerful because, as I had mentioned previously, when you spit into a tube and they extract your DNA, they actually test it against about 600,000 markers. So,
how long does it take to run a test and come up with that many markers? At least looking for them. What, an hour a day? How long?
If you were running your own lab, It'd take a day or two.
Okay.
The targets are already on commercial chips. So anybody can buy the chips, and commercially, those chips cost in the neighborhood of like $20. So you can buy the chip with all the targets for $20.
Wow!
And all you really have to do is extract the DNA from the sample. So if you got a sample and extract the DNA, you go and you pop it into the you layer it onto the chip, you incubate it, and everything's automatic. You know, that it gets read, and you get the profile, and then you can compare the profile you got to whatever you have in the database. And that's what's so remarkable. I mean, they didn't really give a whole lot of specifics in the media. The one clue that they gave is that they basically didn't used the sample without acknowledging, you know, A, that it was being investigated by the police, and B, that the sample was not whoever submitted this sample. And, you know, they basically say, well, you know, 23andMe wasn't involved and Ancestry.com wasn't involved because, you know, they had never been contacted by the police or FBI, the authorities, to basically, you know, ask permission to access their database. But you don't, what's remarkable is you don't need permission, and you don't need to tell 23andMe or Ancestry that you're doing this to actually get your answer. And they ended up using GEDmatch, which is a public database. And but in reality, there's a pretty good chance they use 23andMe and Ancestry.com, and probably 23andMe, neither 23andMe nor Ancestry.com even have any idea that they actually used their database.
Got used, and, I see.
And so, you know, I was kind of give a little bit of history as to how the technology evolved, and then go into a little bit of detail on how they would actually do the test, search the database. And frankly, if I had his DNA, I could do most of what they did from a computer and access the same data that they accessed. And neither 23andMe nor Ancestry nor GEDmatch nor Family Tree DNA nor MyHeritage DNA, which would be the largest databases out there, none of them would know. And and that's why it's all very doable today.
Yeah.
And
they'll be doing it from
and it will expand pretty dramatically.
Yeah, I think they'll probably have it in police car computer terminals, right? They'll just take a swab on the scene, stick it in, and
it's probably not going to be that automated that quickly.
It's coming. It's coming. It's coming.
Well, I mean, you can get the relatives pretty quickly, but it probably takes a little bit of police work to go from the relatives to the actual subject. So you would get matches to a degree, and that's what's so compelling and powerful about the technology. It's mm-hmm. like this is in the category of horseshoes and hand grenades. That all you need to do is come close, and in fact, that's the power of the technology. And that's why I say you could identify anybody in the U.S. Using this technology, because they all have relatives that are in one of these databases, and you could actually do stepping stones from your initial hit and work your way closer if you wanted to actually be more active where you were generating new samples. But you can get pretty far down the road today from your computer terminal and using existing databases that have already been generated. But just to give a little bit of background, I mean, I was watching this series after I heard that he had been identified through GEDmatch. GEDmatch is a database I use all the time, and it's powerful because you can search samples from the different companies. Essentially, all the companies I mentioned that do this personal DNA testing, the 23andMe, Ancestry are the two biggest ones. There's a couple other ones that are a little bit smaller, which is Family Tree DNA and MyHeritage DNA. Each of those, you give them a sample. For the first two, you actually spit in a tube. For the other, for the second two, you actually do a cheek swab. And so basically, the first two they're getting the DNA from the white blood cells in your saliva. The other two, they're getting the DNA from cheek cells in your mouth. And they extract the DNA. They use, you know, very similar chips. The 23andMe has got the most current one. It's a little bit different because they threw out a lot of the markers and added a lot of markers. So the overlap is not quite as big. with 23andMe as the other three. The other three are kind of earlier versions, and earlier version of 23andMe would match that. But in any event, in each case, you send in your sample, and they allow you to basically look for relatives in their database, and they also allow you to download your raw DNA file. So you can download a text file that has the 600,000 markers and what your results are, what your two chromosomes, your two alleles have with regard to a given target. So there's a given target, and there's two possibilities, and they'll tell you which of the two you have, and there's, you know, between the two chromosomes, the two alleles you have, one from your mother, one from your father, you've got, you know, there's four different combinations you can have as far as what you have for each of those 600,000.
All right, well, so, go ahead. Okay. Go ahead. We want to get into the mechanics of how they use this to catch the guy, and for people who didn't read the story. So give a little bit more about that, that would be helpful. Yeah.
Well, all they've really said, to give you the two clues, is one, they basically used a fake ID, and two, they use GEDmatch. And as I mentioned, GEDmatch doesn't actually do the testing. GEDmatch allows you to upload your raw DNA file.
Right.
And so, like I said, each of the four services that I mentioned allows you to download your raw DNA file. So if you give your sample, you have the all you have to do is say you want to download it, and it'll go right to your email, and you can get your raw DNA file, and then with that in hand, you can go to GEDmatch and upload your data to that database, and they'll accept the data from any of those four services plus additional ones. There's other smaller, newer ones that you can also upload. So the advantage of GEDmatch is you can search across all of these different platforms, and it's very interactive in the sense that you can set the parameters as to what your definition of a match is. And they're pretty forthcoming. I mean, a lot of times the name is coded, so you won't see the actual name of the person, but you will see the email address of the person who actually uploaded the data. And so it's pretty straightforward to contact that person. And if you've got a match, a lot of times you exchange information because you are genetically related to the person who you're asking information for.
Right.
So GEDmatch, A, is public, and B, is pretty easy to know who is controlling the DNA, who ran the, you know, submitted the samples, and that person is going to know who those people really are. And so it has that type of advantage. For the other sites that actually generate the data, they'll allow you to act to contact the person online through their service, so that you can request, you know, sharing information, and you can exchange emails, and so you can get to the source of the DNA. In any of these, you know, they don't have to answer, and, you know, they don't have to, as I had mentioned before, they don't have to really use their real name. And so, you know, you had been talking about the government using it and getting the databases. And I was saying that, you know, it's not that rigorous, that you could basically take your sample and send it in and use and assign any name you want. Initially, they used to allow you to do it anonymously, and that's exactly what the police did. They used a fake ID to send the sample in.
Huh.
So they had no idea that they were basically getting a sample from, you know, the Golden State Killer.
Yeah, I got it. Who did they, Henry, again, excuse me, who did they use? Which company, do you know? Did they tell?
They didn't. They used to create the raw DNA files.
Uh-huh.
They did indicate that they went through GEDmatch, G-E-D match, and that's for genealogy types of applications.
Okay.
And so GEDmatch is the company that they said they used, and they mentioned GEDmatch because that's a public database. But in reality, there's a very, very, very good possibility that they basically took this DNA sample and submitted it to one of the larger companies like 23andMe or Ancestry, or both, actually. And basically, that's how you would do it today. If you wanted to actually do an investigation and you had, you know, a reasonable amount of DNA to work with,
right?
You could pretty much cover everything that's out there by sending in one sample to 23andMe and another sample to Ancestry. And with those two, you could basically access the other databases, and you would have pretty much accessibility to everything out there. So they didn't say they used 23andMe, and they didn't say they used Ancestry.com. And basically, neither 23andMe nor Ancestry.com would really know that they used it if they just basically sent it in with some name and they didn't, you know, say that they were, you know, a government or, you know, police agency. If they just sent it in as an individual and just took the DNA that they got from their crime scene and put that into the tube that you would spit in, and then just basically add the stabilization fluid,
uh-huh,
drop it in the mailbox, they could get one of those companies to actually create the raw DNA files for them.
Well, let's put it this way. If not before, then certainly probably now, there are potentially a lot of law enforcement agencies doing this on the QT.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's legal to do this in, you know, this isn't my area. I think it's like 13 states currently actually, uh-huh, use this technology.
Yeah, they'll be all 50 before you know it. And they'll, they'll have it in police cars.
I don't know. I mean, like I'm saying, the easiest way to do it is to simply do it as I said. You don't have to ask permission. You don't have to tell them you're doing it. You can simply take the sample, drop it in the mailbox like a normal retail user, and you will have the ability.
Oh, listen! The federal government will set something up like NCIC for digital readout of DNA samples, and the cops will just use their own service. It's total absolute control. They'll have it in the squad cars.
The agencies, the agencies can set up their own labs. I mean, these are some of the things.
That's what I'm saying. It's all going to happen. It's right there.
Yeah, the chip is commercially available. Aluminum makes
there
the
you
chip.
Go.
All right. You can buy the chips. All you have to know how to do from a technology standpoint is extract DNA.
Got it. All right, hold on, Henry. Got to take a break. Just a second. Come right back with Henry Nyman in just a minute. Henry, talking about your DNA, which soon will be taken from you by pulled over for doing 35 in a 25 zone. They'll ask you outside, and if you refuse the DNA, they'll take you downtown if they want to. Look, this is all coming. Guaranteed. This is the world we live in, and will live in quite shortly. Go ahead, Henry.
Okay. Well, I thought I might kind of just go through the mechanics a little bit, so your listeners who haven't already done this would have a better idea on how easy it is to get this information and how quick it is to get this information and how it's already out there. the ballpark numbers. The Ancestry.com has about 10 million people in their database, and 23andMe has about 5 million people in their database. And there may be a little bit of overlap there, but it probably isn't a whole lot. And I'm not sure how current those numbers are, because I know that, you know, they both have been offering sales, you know, ever since Thanksgiving, actually. It's as soon as one ends, the next one begins. I mean, there's Mother's Day sales going on right now, but they've already had Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year's and Valentine's Day and Mother's Day. So they're offering discounts on the kits. And for 23andMe, it was as low as $50, $49. Right now, for Mother's Day, I think it's $79 or so. And Ancestry dropped their price recently down to $59, and they've kept it there. I don't even know if it's a holiday or not. So they're both relatively inexpensive. And you know, literally all you have to do is spit in a tube and drop it in the mailbox. And so it's very easy to, you know, submit your sample. And you get all the results online. And so just to give you an idea of, you know, it really comes down to a database and what you can search and what you get an answer for. So for all of these companies, you start out by giving your results, and one of the things they all offer it by various names, but it's the same end result, is your DNA relatives. So they will take your sample, and they will tell you who is most closely related to you in their database. And most of these, the real close ones, they can be quite precise. I mean, they'll tell you that this is your son or daughter. This is your aunt or uncle. This is your first, second, third, fourth, fifth cousin. And so you'll know about how related each of these people are to you based upon the DNA matching and which of those 600,000 markers you have in common. And these are all both automatic and virtually instantaneous. And so if you did 23andMe, you would get results from searching those approximately 5 million samples. If you did Ancestry, you'd have results from about 10 million samples. And for the other locations, you can actually take your raw DNA and upload it to their site and find out who's related to you in their database. So that, you know, literally, if you do those two, 23andMe and Ancestry, you can find your relatives on all of the companies that I mentioned, and find out who's most closely related to you. And they'll automatically tell you what that relationship is. You know, they'll say, this is your son, this is your daughter. If you basically do two samples, they'll say, this is your twin, you know, that's all both automatic and instantaneous. And then you can go across the different databases by going to a site like GenMatch. And in GenMatch, they'll allow you to upload your DNA from the four main site services I mentioned, plus a number of additional ones. And the disadvantage of GenMatch is they're not going to have those 10 million from one and 5 million from the other. They're only going to have ones that the people among those customers decided to download their DNA file and to upload it to GenMatch. One of the big advantages of GenMatch, though, is it lets you basically go from one person to the next, you know, very, very quickly, like from a click of a mouse. So if you went and uploaded your DNA to GenMatch, and they said, this is your second cousin. And they'll actually do the calculation. They'll say how many generations they are away from you, and they'll say what they call a centimorgan score, which is you know, how much of your DNA matches, and they'll break it down. They'll tell you which chromosome it is, what position on the chromosome it is. So you can get a lot of information. But one of the powerful aspects of GenMatch is you can basically look at who's related to the person that's related to you. So that if
who's related to the person that's related to you, okay?
Right.
So you don't even need a direct line. I get it.
So if you put your DNA in there and you get somebody that's basically you know, listed as your second cousin,
right?
If you just click on their link, you'll get all the people related to your second cousin who's in the database. They'll be in order based upon how closely related to your second cousin they are. And so you can go click, 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 and they'll also allow you to upload your genealogical trees. And so there's software available to put together genealogical trees, and then you can upload that to the site, and that will be with your DNA. So, A, you can see who's related, and then you can click on the genealogical tree of that person and see who, you know, what people are related to them, even if their DNA isn't there, you know, just based upon them filling out their genealogical tree. And that's one of the strong suits of Ancestry is they allow you to do that. And then they have a lot of, you know, public records that let you verify who the different people are on the tree and how they're related and what their background is and then who they're related to. And so you can get a lot of information from anybody that does match, even if they don't have their DNA in there. Their relatives frequently will have these genealogical trees that are there, and you can trace who the, you know, prior relatives are and who the current relatives are. And so you've essentially got a roadmap. And so to do what was done to get the Golden State Killer, they could have done a lot of it just on based upon what was at GenMatch alone. So they could go and see, well, these are the people that are most closely related to him. And then they can click and say, these are the people that are most closely related to the ones that are most closely related to him. And then in some cases, they'll have a genealogical tree. So they'll say, well, this person is his second cousin. Uh-huh. And here are who's related to the second cousin. And they'll have those names. And then they have an email address, so they can actually contact the person who they submitted the DNA, and you know, if they're willing to cooperate, they can, you know, confirm who the relatives are, and both who have submitted a DNA sample and who are just on the tree, and get information along those lines. I mean, for the killer, I watched the series, and it seemed they were pretty convinced that that A, he was in the Sacramento area, and B, even when he scaled up and was moving from raping to actually killing, the victims that he was killing in the Santa Barbara area as well as in the Los Angeles area, the pattern made them suspect that he didn't really live in those areas, that he was still out in Sacramento. And he would come to those areas either on business or whatever. And the patterns all suggested he was in the Sacramento area. So you can imagine how the detective work, follow. That they would look at some of the relatives and find out, you know, do you have a third cousin in, mm-hmm. lives in the Sacramento area? Mm-hmm. And, And if they wanted, and I don't know whether they did this or not, you could, you know, generate new data. You wouldn't just have to work with the existing databases. And like I say, that part you could do from your computer. You know, if you had his sample, you could get a lot of information without ever talking to anybody, just by clicking on who the relatives were, who the relatives of those relatives were, where they fell on a phylogenetic tree, and you'd have names that you could look up and see where they were born, where they lived, and where they got married, and where they died. And I mean, these are public records that are out there that are linked to these names. And so if you've got a person's name and a birth date, you can get a lot of information on that person just through public records, and the public records are linked. So there's a lot of information that basically anybody can get if they want to do this type of tracking. And you wouldn't have to contact anybody. You wouldn't have to contact 23andMe or Ancestry other than order a kit and drop it in the mailbox. And they would have no idea that the sample you sent in really wasn't you, and it was really a DNA sample from a crime scene, and you're trying to figure out whose DNA that was. And that's what the big difference is between this technology, where you're looking at the families, and the current technology that is widely used, where you're looking for an exact match. Mm-hmm. So when they're looking for a hit, the only way they're going to get a hit is if the person, you know, the DNA from the crime scene belongs to somebody who has already had their DNA collected and already put into a database, which in this case frequently is from criminals. And so the Golden State killer was a former police officer. He never gave a DNA sample. And he wasn't in any of these databases. And in fact, he wasn't in, you know, GEDmatch or Ancestry or 23andMe. He never gave his DNA to anybody. But he didn't have to, because his relatives did. And so by using that DNA and looking to see who is related, they can identify who relatives, and they can identify the relationship of that relative as to whether he's a first, second, third cousin type of a thing. And they could also potentially go to those people that was a second cousin and identify other people that were related to that second cousin that hadn't given a DNA sample, and actually get a DNA sample for them to see if that DNA is getting closer to the target or getting further away from the target. So you could collect new samples and kind of use those samples as a genetic roadmap to zero in on the original source. And that's why I said the existing databases are probably big enough right now, with 15 to 20 million people, that you could pretty well zero in on anybody in the United States by simply looking at what that relationship is, and especially if you wanted to collect additional samples and work your way towards the source. Mm-hmm. And that's why the technology is so much more powerful, mm-hmm, than the existing, where the DNA already has to be in the database, mm-hmm, and all you're, mm-hmm, really looking for is an exact match.
Well, it's like a spider web.
Match,
sure.
You know who the person is.
Yeah.
But if you have, you know, close, then you kind of have a lead saying, well, this is the second cousin of the killer. And then you get, you know, a second cousin or first cousin of the second cousin, and you find out whether you're getting closer, whether you have a better match. And you're looking at 600,000 data points for each one of these comparisons. And so it's very easy to tell whether you're getting closer or further away. And you can just, with enough samples, you can run through this. It's my understanding that when they did GEDmatch, they had a list of 100 relatives that they went through. And so they took the 100 people that were most closely related, uh-huh, and then probably made...
All right, let me jump to the punchline here. How's this going to stand up in court for conviction?
Well, the conviction they got at the end, there's no doubt about it, because once they figured out who this guy was,
right,
they
he's not going to get out on a technicality of some kind or the skepticism. I mean genetically. Are these now virtually foolproof in terms of prosecutorial evidence? I mean, I hope they fry the guy.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
A, that's out of my area. B, when I was watching this series, they did touch upon using relatives for DNA.
Right.
And they only, they probably talked about it for 1 or 2 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And they said that, the use of this technology is in its infancy, and how widespread it would be or how useful it would be is still to be determined. Something along those lines, really kind of not doing anything very conclusive. It's my understanding, though, it's either 13 or 23 states do allow for this type of testing. And I don't know what the rules are. I don't know if, in some instances, it would be like a search warrant that you would have to get a warrant to basically do this type of investigation. And in other cases, I don't know, because, for going into court, you would use this to identify who that person is. And in this case, they got a discarded sample to get the DNA. So once they had a pretty good idea of who the killer was, they were able to, get a cigarette or a coffee cup or a discarded soda can, something that they got his DNA, and then they compared that discarded DNA to the DNA from the crime scene, and it was an exact match. So they know they've got the right person. And how much the methodology to identify who the likely subject was before they actually got the identifying DNA, I don't know how that would stand up in a court of law, because in reality, it's not like they're the people that they're using, they're not basically arresting them. So, I mean, the people that were identified in the database, it's not like, they basically got access to their database and they charged that person with a crime. I think that would be something much more difficult to hold up in court, is that you're basically using the database of a person to convict that person. In this case, you're using the database to identify a relative that's a lead for you. The relative isn't who you're charging. You're just asking for cooperation. And then, the subsequent samples that actually lead you to, potentially, I'm not sure if they did that or not. I'm not sure if they walked along and got additional samples and moved closer to closer.
Right.
Or, this case is 40 years old, and they've been working on the case, and they had a lot of information, and they may have been able to just go down that list of 100 people and essentially use each of those people as a tip and find out how many of them say, oh, yeah, I've got a third cousin who's in Sacramento, and his name is Joseph James D'Angelo. And another guy says, oh, I got a second cousin. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my second cousin. He's mm-hmm. And then they may have very well got these people to cooperate and say that, I've got a second cousin in Sacramento, and this is mm-hmm. his name, and get another one to say, uh-huh, I've got a third cousin in Sacramento. This is his name. And it turns out that the DNA says that Joseph D'Angelo is this guy's second cousin. He's this guy's third cousin. And so just through interviews, they might have enough information that they pretty well knew that this was the guy. It's just like triangulation type of a thing. So they're kind of hitting it from several different
We got to wrap this up. One more question. How revolutionary is this? How much bigger of a step is this for criminality and hunting the bad guys?
Because, like I said, I was going to give you the history. I mean, the technology to actually look at DNA has been around since the late 80s or so, at a forensic level. And then these expanded databases, not sure the exact dates. Again, it's out of my area, but it's not brand new. It was at least 10, 15 years ago, laws were passed that allowed DNA to be collected from felons, I think was limited to felons. And they created these databases. So the databases kind of expanded. 10, 15 years ago. And they've had this DNA for 40 years. So, they didn't identify him because they were looking for an exact match. And this is just exactly the opposite. If you have an exact match, you don't need this technology. What this technology does is it lets you get to the exact person by just identifying who the relatives are.
Wow.
And so you have a lot of matches. If you have a DNA sample, you probably have many matches in the United States, and those matches will lead you to that person. So any person in the United States could be identified.
I got it. All right.
You didn't have to give a DNA sample.
Henry, thank you. That's very interesting. Probably the definitive look at this new breakthrough, and it's a big one. We thank you. Take care, and we'll talk soon, Henry.
Okay, very good.
Okay. Good night. Dr. Nyman, and there you go. It's where we're headed. The next step in total control. Be right back.